My name is John Lavallo, and it's a pleasure to welcome our first guest today, Jim Farley, Group Vice President, Global Marketing, Sales, and Service at Ford Motor Company. Jim began his career in the automotive industry in 1990 with Toyota, where he spent 17 years in a variety of roles, the most recent of which was Group Vice President, General Manager of the Lexus brand. In November 2007, Jim came over to Ford as the head of Global Marketing Operations. In September 2009, the regions of Canada, Mexico, and South America were added to his list of responsibilities. And finally, in August 2010, Jim took on his current role as Ford's first ever global leader of marketing, sales, and service. Now, during his relatively short tenure with the company, Jim has had a meaningful impact on consumer perception of Ford's vehicles. I think a fantastic example of this is the Fiesta movement, which literally became an overnight sensation on social media sites like YouTube and Twitter. So now Jim continues to drive home the One Ford strategy with what he refers to as the democratization of marketing. So with that, please welcome Jim Farley.
Thank you, John, and good morning, everyone. Hope everyone's okay. Good, some smiling faces. Today I wanted to just give you a brief outline of where the company is going on our four-point plan and then spend most of the time on Q&A just to support you. And before we, and it is really a treat to be here in San Francisco. I lived in Santa Monica for 17 years working for Toyota, and it's great to be back in this part of California. It is really a treat to be with all of you. A very knowledgeable and insightful audience, and I'm anxious to get your suggestions, not only questions. Obviously, the one of the keys for us is the external environment. Sorry, there we go. And I think many of you know this more than we do, but we see an expansion of the economies around the world. Consumers are getting more excited about spending money. And in the auto industry, we see last year was about 65 million unit industry around the world. We see that to be about 70 million this year, so a 5 or 10% improvement, almost led entirely by the growth in the auto market in China. Consumer spending in the U.S. And Europe continue to be below trend, although there are some exciting share changes going on in the market. And we see some really significant headwinds in Europe and certain key markets where the fiscal tightening is starting to take effect. Believe it or not, despite a lot of the headwinds in the demand side, we do continue to see escalation of commodity prices, especially in closed markets like Brazil for steel and precious metals, and that's made things a little bit more interesting for us. For many of you, who don't know the Ford plan, our plan is pretty simple. Al Mulally laid out a plan that, to me, was engaging enough that I left almost a 20-year career at Toyota to join the Ford team in the middle of a pretty tough time at Ford. And the first idea is pretty novel, especially in the domestic industry, is match demand and supply. This takes a lot of courage, and it required us to completely restructure the company's scale, especially in North America. The second is to accelerate during the hardest of times the freshness of our product range and invest in a balanced portfolio of small, medium, and large cars, crossovers, and trucks, balance our portfolio, and do it on a global scale by sharing upper bodies across the world. Now, in the luxury market, a lot of companies have global products. But in the mainstream market, most manufacturers develop scale on a regional basis. And Ford's approach is different. We reduced our structural costs over the last few years by $10 billion. You can see what's really amazing to me, almost as an outsider, is we reduced our assembly capacity by almost 40% by the end of next year, and over 25% so far calendar year to date. When we started with the plant since 2005, in my function, like all the other functions, we've reduced headcount almost 50%. We've improved our competitiveness on the manufacturing side, working together with the UAW, and which is also very exciting for me because I'm very involved in the product development processes. We've really shrunk the time to develop a new product by about 6 months in the last couple of years, and we've reduced the amount of money it takes to develop a top hat or an upper body variation of our platform by 66% by the end of the 2012. That is a dramatic change in engineering efficiency. Just gives you a taste for how aggressive we've been to try to get the company right-sized. So the real exciting part of the company for me is the vision on the product side, and this is one of the reasons why I left Toyota. Everyone knows about our regional products at Ford, and I just highlight to North America that the Asia and the European portfolio would have kind of similar characteristic. You are all very familiar with our regional products like Mustang and F-Series and Explorer and Flex. But what's really exciting for us as Ford is to balance our lineup with a full line of B, C, and CD cars, so the Fiesta-sized vehicles, the Focus-sized vehicles, and the Fusion-sized vehicles. These are the core of the automotive market around the world, the 70 million units of demand. And what's really exciting for us is that we're building a portfolio of small and medium-sized vehicles to balance our traditional strength in truck. We continue to aggressively invest in our truck lineup because of our leadership. Our share's up almost 4 points this year. The commercial market is really spiked in demand this year. It's really helped us with the new F-Series and Super Duty. But what gets me up in the morning is to balance that with a whole lineup of Focus. As you can see in the bottom left, we had the Transit Connect, the first small C-based van in the U.S. We are aggressively working on the next generation Escape, which will be combined with the Kuga in Europe. That will also be based on the C-segment. Together with Focus, and we're building a small minivan based on the Focus called the Grand C-Max. And those are just four of over 10 body types we will develop on the Focus platform to be sold around the world, including here in the U.S. We'll do the same thing for Fiesta and the same thing for our CD car, the Fusion. And, you know, this is just a better illustration of that. You know, in the past we didn't even sell Fiesta in the U.S., and we had two different Fiestas. We consolidated that into one global product on the B2E platform, and already just last year we sold almost 1 million units of Fiesta, the new Fiesta, and it's just going on sale here in the U.S. By 2014, the Fiesta, the top product, we think the global sales will be about 1.6 million per year. The biggest platform for us is the Focus platform. We traditionally have had at least two, perhaps three different Focuses around the world, the C-170 in North America and the C-307 in the rest of the world. We consolidated that, and we'll be launching in the first quarter of this year in Western Europe and the U.S. the first true one Ford global Focus to be launched simultaneously. And that platform and all the upper bodies will constitute over 2 million units of annual sales for us. Huge scale on a global basis, and our big bet is customers will want the same Focus no matter where they live, in Shanghai or in San Francisco. And then we are working now, in the midst of working on consolidation of our CD platform, the European Mondeo and the Ford Fusion into one CD product, and probably more important than that, all the upper body variations, minivans, utilities, commercial, all based on that platform. And in addition to that, what's even more exciting is our powertrain. We are aggressively investing in global powertrain, especially EcoBoost, to transform our reputation for fuel economy in each of those global platforms. we compete. And our vision is to, like the Ford promise we've always made, is to democratize fuel economy. Not just have fuel-efficient science projects for 100,000 wealthy customers, but to bring fuel economy to millions through technologies like EcoBoost. So the average customer can buy the most fuel-efficient vehicle in the segment. And of course, balance that with a full range of electrified vehicles on those global platforms. We want to be best in class in safety around the world, and that means different things in different markets. And the area of differentiation for Ford, the real key difference for us in our DNA, is the last, the smart pillar. We want to democratize technology to the average customer more aggressively than our competitors. I think all of you know the progress we made in quality. The last J.D. Powers were top five, the highest of any full-line manufacturer. It takes a little while for customers to catch on. We lost our quality edge over a long period of time, and but we're seeing quickly customers acknowledge that we are the leader in quality, in this case, initial quality in J.D. Powers, beyond any of our Asian competitors, and the only full-line manufacturer in the top five. And but the key correlating customer factor with quality that really moves the needle in terms of favorable opinion in shopping is fuel economy. Since 2004, Ford has improved its fuel economy in the U.S. by over 20%, almost double our competitors. And while a lot of the Asian manufacturers had a change, we've really boosted our economy across the lineup. Whether it's replacing a 6-liter V8 with our new 3.5-liter twin turbocharged EcoBoost engine on our F-Series, or our new 2-liter EcoBoost engine, which will be available on the new Explorer, we are aggressively downsizing our engines using forced induction EcoBoost to offer fuel economy that's best in class. And in fact, now we're best in class in fuel economy and Fusion, Escape, F-Series, Fiesta, and soon we predict Focus. So all the key core segments in the U.S. will be best in class or unsurpassed in fuel economy. Of course, we made great progress on our safety. Actually, Ford's always had a great reputation, very competitive, if not better than our Japanese competitors on safety. And just for example, Fiesta was the first small car to ever get from the Insurance Institute of Highway Safety a top pick, the first B car to ever do that. And we continue to implement new safety technologies like blind spot monitor, adaptive cruise control across our range of products, not just active but also not just passive but also active safety. But the areas I mentioned that Ford is really starting to get traction with customers is what we call the smart pillar. We've implemented across our lineup a very aggressive technology roadmap of new features. We have adaptive cruise control on many of our vehicles, a feature that's only available in luxury cars. We now have collision warning and brake assist, self-park feature on many of our new vehicles. We have blind spot information system, and once you use that blind spot monitor, it's an incredible safety feature. We have the new MyKey that allows you to program the speed of your vehicle and the use of the vehicle for children or other people in the household. In the key itself, we have the new capless fuel system, reposition the vehicle to what you care about. It's a whole new way of interacting with the vehicle. And finally, cars are catching up to our personal electronic devices. And there's no other manufacturer that offers this kind of interface. It's that intuitive. Because of the implementation and acceleration of our new product and the company's reputation, frankly, we've seen a transformation in shopping in the Ford brand in the United States. As you can see, our purchase intentions are all up by almost 32%. And that's really driven by one metric, favorable opinion. It doesn't get talked a lot, but in the purchase funnel, when people are aware of your brand, that people buy, the key metric for us in our industry, especially for a weaker brand, is favorable opinion. What percentage of the customers have a favorable opinion of your product? In the past, Ford had on the car and crossover almost a 40-point gap to Toyota, Honda, and favorable opinion. We've completely eliminated that gap with Toyota. We now have the same favorable opinion as Toyota on our car and crossover and truck products, and that's resulted in a 28% improvement in our favorable opinion just in the last year and a half. And that's due, frankly, to the new Taurus, new F-Series, the new Fusion, and the Fusion Hybrid, and the improvement in our favorable opinion. But that's not enough. How we go to market is very important. As you can see, almost half of our media spend is now experiential and digital. These are core medias that, frankly, are just as core as TV advertising. And we've also made a significant investment in earned media by working with new partners on the PR side. We're getting the Ford story out not only on social media, but also through mass media journalists, the Today Show, Oprah, and getting our story into people's household to be conversational has never been more important in our marketing model. As John mentioned, one of the new things we did is the Fiesta movement. And if you're not in the market for a Fiesta, I wouldn't be surprised you don't know it. That's okay. What we did, we knew that we had not been in the B segment in the U.S. for more than 20 years. We had zero nameplate awareness. No one knew we had even a relevant product range. And so we brought 100 Fiestas from Europe a year before launch. We gave them to 100 people who were social media aficionados. We gave them a task, and we gave them the vehicle for free for 6 months. It cost us very little, basically a lease on 100 vehicles. They drove the vehicle, we gave them assignments every week, and they used social media, Twitter, Facebook, etc., to talk about their experience in the new Fiesta. For about 10 cents on the dollar, we now have unaided name awareness that's higher than Honda Fit and the Toyota Yaris, the leaders in the segment. In fact, we had about $100 million worth of exposure for the Fiesta movement before we even launched the vehicle. And it was very controversial to start a year before, but it was the smartest thing we ever did. This idea came from China. When we launched Fiesta in China, we launched it on social media. It was so effective, we just remixed it for the U.S. using European models. And we're now doing this with all of our vehicles. You may have noticed we launched the new Explorer not at a car show or an auto show. We launched on Facebook in about 14 cities around the United States about a month ago. And Fiesta Movement has really changed our mind about how we go to market with vehicles in the U.S. Much more earned media. And it's so efficient compared to going out to the networks and buying huge TV buys for 2 months. Thanks to our new product range, the way we go to market, and the changing opinion of our vehicle, for the first time in more than a decade and a half, Ford in the U.S. is growing. You could see for the last 2 years that our market share is growing. In the last year, first half of this year, we're up to 16.7% of market share in the U.S., about a point and a half growth. You could see compared to 2 years ago, we're up about 2.5 points. You also see the widening gap we have in leadership of the fleet business, the difference between the green and the blue line. That's largely due to our growing dominance in the truck and commercial market. We've actually decreased our sales to the rental, which is about a third of the fleet market, and really continue to dominate the fleet and the commercial and the government part of the fleet business. But this is very exciting for us at Ford, to be growing, to be vibrant, to be launching new products, come out, and it's really energized the whole company to grow further. But the most important part of that growth is it's healthy growth. What I mean by that is, from a customer standpoint, the most important metric to drive is resale value. That's the one thing that gets customers to come back and be loyal to your brand. And in the last year, Ford has the highest growth of resale value of any full-line manufacturer in the U.S. In fact, now, a Fusion is worth more than a Camry. Now, we haven't used that in marketing yet, but it is the ultimate arbitrator of value. When your customers say that your car is going to be worth more than your competitors, and this has a huge downstream impact on the profitability of our finance company as those vehicles come back into the market. We have been able to grow that market share in a healthy way by reducing radically our incentives and improve our resale value and walking away from unhealthy fleet business. And that is the key driver for our improvement of our resale value year over year. The other exciting thing for us is that we're not only growing in the U.S., we're growing in Asia aggressively. Our sales in India are up 160% this year. Our sales in China are up 42%. We were the number two manufacturer in Europe in March. Our sales this year in the U.S. with that share growth is up almost 20% in a market that's roughly up 10%. We're now the number one manufacturer in Canada. Our sales are up 18% through August, so we're growing around the world, and that's very exciting for us as well. On a financial performance standpoint, you'll see in the second quarter improvement in the overall company's profitability of $3.2 billion, and you'll notice that of the 3.2, 2.6 is driven by the revenue side, improvement in our volume and mix, and improvement in net pricing. That is all coming from our new launched products around the globe. And largely, if you see the line below that, the $1.4 and the $1 billion in net pricing, largely coming from the U.S. Of course, we've made great progress on the cost, offsetting increasing industries and increasing sales. Our cost performance actually has improved thanks to much lower warranty rates from our quality progress and cost reductions, which are offsetting substantial material cost increases and, of course, volume-related cost improvements, increases. Exchange has been positive as well. I think this is a great story. Our costs are improving and being reduced at the same time as we're aggressively growing top line, both in share and in pricing, both simultaneously. At the same time, as you notice in our third bullet point of our plan is to improve our balance sheet. And as the operational profitabilities come back to the company has been extremely aggressive at buying down our debt. As you can see, just in 2010 so far, we've brought down $7 billion of debt, about $3 billion, which is a repayment of our revolver line of credit. We've also paid $3.8 billion to the Viva Trust and as well. We have fully retired our Viva Note A obligation. We also bought back our current deferred quarterly distributions on our trust preferred securities. And these reductions in our debt have improved, have reduced our annual interest savings of interest costs of about $500 million. You know, one of the key, and I think one of the most important sustainment parts of our plan is really working together. I am very committed to improving the relationship with our dealers around the world. In the U.S., we involve our dealers in everything, from our product to our go-to-market strategy to our brand campaigns. The dealers are full partners in every decision the company makes. And as a result, we are now seeing our NADA survey results with our dealers as the best we've ever had, period, in the company, through the most difficult times. And I cannot tell you the multiplier effect of having the dealers on your side. When you're trying to consolidate your network from 6,000 dealers down to 3,000, the dealers are on your side. They'll help you participate in the consolidation. And we work very carefully to nurture that relationship. The employee satisfaction now is almost 90% favorable on our future outlook. The relationship with the supplier. higher. Alan jokingly says when he got there, we were worst in the industry, and now in many surveys, we have the best relationship with our suppliers in the industry, and our corporate reputation continues to improve in a rate that we haven't seen in a big company like Ford in the past. We're actually the number one automotive brand in corporate reputation, which is how you run the company, what's your reputation with the community, and what's your reputation for your products, including fuel economy. And most of all, what's not on this chart is the way we work together as a leadership team. One of the things that Alan brought to the company is very unique is our matrix organization. For me, I used to run and be responsible for the South America operation, but I'm even more excited to be the global leader for marketing, sales, and service and support each of the business unit leaders and work together as a team. Working within a matrix organization is really exciting for a professional like me, especially when you work with people who want to partner with you to improve their basic top-line revenue, and I think it's really one of the secret sauces at Ford. So, in short, our Ford plan is working. We restructured and significantly lowered our fixed costs. We're starting to see the benefits of aggressively accelerating our product cycle plan a few years ago and balancing our portfolio. Thankfully, our products are very well received in the market. The Fiesta already is turning at more than 50% sales turn within the dealer's lots, and we expect the Focus to be well received. We've broken in the top five now in initial quality, the top of any full-line manufacturer, not premium brand. We have substantially improved our reputation for fuel economy. Our resale values now are among the top in the industry. We've not only stabilized, but we began to grow our market share and top-line revenue. We bought down $7 billion of debt so far, we are really delivering solid profitability for the company, not just for us, but for our suppliers, our dealers, and all of our employees. One of the dramatic parts of the recovery of Ford is what's happening in our North America operation. You can see in 2007, 2008, when the industry was 16.5 and 13.5 million units, a lot larger than today, we were losing substantial amount of money. And in the third quarter of 2009, you can see that in an industry about the same size as today, we started to make money. And you can see, although the industry didn't change much, our profitability in North America is almost up to $2 billion a quarter. So the North America operation has really been supercharged, and the break-even has completely changed because of the restructuring and also the growth in the top-line revenue and our improvement in pricing power. So that's my presentation, and I'd be happy to take any questions from you.
I'll start, but before I do, if I could just ask everyone to state their name and company before asking a question, and if you could wait for the microphone, that would be appreciated. Jim, my question pertains to the basically the launch of the EcoBoost on the 2011 Explorer. I mean, how is Ford going to work to convince consumers to pay more for a four-cylinder EcoBoost than the standard V6, particularly given where gas prices are?
Great question, John. We intend, as a backdrop, and why your question is so important for us, is that we intend to have EcoBoost across every one of our vehicles as a core powertrain, not as a small share of the sales mix, but as substantial from Fiesta all the way through to Super Duty. In our research with customers, we found that although fuel prices are moderated now, because of the wealth effect of customers in the U.S., they know, because of the escalation of fuel prices a year and a half ago, they know that tomorrow they could wake up and gas could be $4 a gallon. Fuel economy has actually become more important as a purchase reason, and it wasn't so long ago, a year or so ago, that 40% of the people who left the Ford brand left because of fuel economy, the perception of fuel economy. So offering EcoBoost-type engines, which are downsized and have between 1 to maybe 5 miles per gallon better than the best in class is really very attractive to customers. And we have seen in our research that customers do the math. And if the payback is less than 2 years, they'll pay a premium for the fuel economy, even in a low fuel environment. And thing is the uncertainty around stability of fuel prices. Those two things have really changed the headset of customers, and they're now doing different kinds of math in their head around fuel economy. And to introduce the 2-liter four-cylinder engine in an Explorer that has 2, 3, 4 miles per gallon better than their competitors' most efficient V6 is pretty interesting to customers, even if they have to pay a little more.
This is Pina Parini, ITDCLA Asset Management. I saw your presentation. A couple of questions for you. You mentioned before about, at the beginning, escalation in commodity prices. Could you elaborate a little bit on that to see how negotiations with, for example, steel producers are going? The second one, could you address more in detail what's happening in domestic market in the U.S. in terms of unit growth expectation and in terms of your competition? Other U.S. makers have been going through a deep restructuring. How are they going to be positioning towards Ford? Thank you.
Okay, well, commodity prices, obviously, the global industry has expanded to about 70 million units. As we've seen that expansion, commodity prices have escalated maybe a little faster than previous increases in the industry, especially in closed markets like Brazil, where steel has to be basically bought and sold locally. In those markets, we've seen escalation in the commodity prices, some easing over the past couple quarters, but significant elevation in the cost, especially in all commodities, but especially in precious metals. And this has made our cost reduction efforts even more important in all those operations, but especially in closed markets like Brazil. The U.S. has seen a dramatic change in each brand's pricing and go-to-market strategy. The most common theme that I've seen today in competing in the market day in and day out, irregardless, is a flattening of the competitive landscape. What I mean by that is, in the past, there were the haves and the have-nots. What I mean by that is, if you looked at the car and crossover business in the U.S., the Asian brands tend to have smaller incentives and higher share. Over the last year, and the domestics tend to have higher incentives and lower share. Over the last year, we've seen a dramatic reshaping of the industry on the revenue side of the business. What I mean by that is, the Asian brands have significantly escalated the retail incentives, to the point that they're now approximately similar, or in some cases higher, than the facing domestic product, a car on the crossover side. And as the domestics have brought over, the companies like Ford have introduced new vehicles, like the new Fusion, like the new Fiesta, we've seen that we've been able to bring down our incentive costs dramatically with the new model, and actually in many cases outperform our Asian competitors in terms of pricing power. And that's resulted in the case of Fusion with a better resale value than Camry. So we're seeing the U.S. and the car and crossover business more being a level playing field, especially in Ford's case. I can't talk about the other manufacturers, but in Ford's case, we've really improved our pricing power because people are buying nicer Fords. And because the brand is getting many more shoppers, we can be a little pickier who to sell to, and not just sell based on our retail incentive. We've de-escalated our incentives substantially year over year, and that's allowed us to improve our resale value and, of course, improve our margins. That's the biggest trend I see. New products win, and it's a very level playing field in the U.S. today.
It looks like the weak spot for profitability is Europe. Could you talk about your aspirations for profitability there? When do you get there and how?
Our European operation continues to be profitable, and we're very optimistic about our prospects in Europe, despite the headwinds marketing as the scrappage programs go off in their home countries. And but despite that, Ford continues to be profitable in Europe, and the reason is because of our new product range. We launched the KA and the Fiesta last year in the midst of the scrappage programs. We're just launching our new CD products, the Mondeo S-Max Galaxy, and we're in the midst of launching our new CMAV products, the C-Max and the Grand C-Max, which are very important for family customers in Europe. And because of our product line is so much newer than a lot of our competitors, we've been able to continue to be profitable. However, that being said, you have to make tough choices every day in Europe on share and profitability because of the behavior of some of the other manufacturers who are protecting their capacity. And there's still quite a bit of overcapacity in the market. But we're very optimistic about our prospects in Europe going forward. But it's tougher every day. Yes.
Thank you, John Dibbs, Beaudry Capital Management, San Francisco. Going back to fuel economy, the luncheon speaker yesterday suggested one of the five ways for the U.S. to decrease its oil imports was through improved mileage, and he suggested that was going to come from technology improvements from startups out here, not from the auto companies. So can you explain to me what EcoBoost is? Secondly, what is your overall fleet mileage today? Where do you expect it to be 2 years from now and 5 years from now? Those are the questions I'd like answered. Thank you.
We don't publish our fleet performance, but as I mentioned in my presentation, we've improved our fuel economy the last 5 years by 20%, more than any other full-line manufacturer. Of course, our model mix is quite different over that period of time, and that impacts your performance on fleet fuel economy. The regulations in the U.S. have recently changed in the last year, and over the next 5+ years, the fuel economy standards are getting much, much more aggressive in the U.S. But more importantly than that, the customers are expecting more fuel-efficient vehicles. When you look at the automotive market in the U.S., new vehicles, there are 11 million units that get sold every year. Coming from Toyota, I was always excited to sell a couple of 100,000 Prius. But the share of that product, even the mainstream Prius, is still a drop in the bucket compared to the mainstream business. Ford's strategy on fuel efficiency improvement is not to bet on one particular technology, like electrification. It's to bet on improvement across the board, and especially to overperform on mainstream fuel economy technologies like EcoBoost and PowerShift, to give regular customers who buy a Focus or a Fusion, not someone who buys a $30,000 or $40,000 electrified vehicle, fuel economy for millions. EcoBoost is basically diesel technology for gas. It's combining high-pressure direct injection and force induction turbocharging. Sometimes we use one turbo, sometimes we use two. We have a lot of experience in Europe with the diesel technology with direct injection and single or twin turbochargers in terms of long-term durability. And we can offer that to customers at a small premium, and the payback is maybe a year or 2 years compared to a fully electric vehicle that may cost $30,000 or $40,000 that only someone who makes $100,000 or more can afford. We will have a full range of battery electric and plug-in and hybrids. We're the number two manufacturer of hybrids in the U.S. today. In fact, our Fusion hybrid gets much better gas mileage than the Camry hybrid, 41 miles per gallon now in the city. So our hybrid sales continue to accelerate in terms of share of that market. We intend to electrify our core C platform with battery electric and plug-in electric